Right about then, the Peshmerga leader pulled the .45 out of his pants and shot Atabeg point blank. The muzzle was about a handspan from the stick pin of the smaller man's necktie.
Shit!
Baron grabbed Charlie and threw him bodily into the ditch by the roadside. He flung himself on top of his boss. Atabeg staggered back. A dark stain spread across the front of his shirt, and his necktie was burning with a smoky blue flame. The Peshmerga leader shot him again, and he fell on his back with arms flung out. The fez came off his head and rolled a few feet away, revealing the bald spot on the top of his head. As the other Peshmerga raised their Kalashnikovs and began to lash the ditch where Baron threw Bostich with bullets, the bus door slammed inward. From outside came a gust of new falling snow, a knife-edged chill. The bus driver leapt from his seat, dashed out the door, ran off up the side of a hill, and was swallowed from sight as the blizzard outside intensified.
Cowardly heathen.
Anya sympathized with the driver. He hadn't signed on for this. He sure wasn't getting paid enough. An immense-looking, broken-nosed AKM assault rifle came in the door, seeming to tow a tall man in a cap behind. He swept the bus with dark eyes and the muzzle brake of his rifle. He favored Anya with a gap-toothed leer and then started toward the back of the bus, evidently intent on securing the men, the only opponents he considered worthy of notice. Eyes blazing, Anya watched him. As he came abreast of her, she lunged at him in a tigerish leap. She caught the gunman totally unaware. Her sudden onslaught sent him staggering several steps backward, slamming his head into the steel pole behind the driver's seat. At the same time, she grabbed the forestock of his weapon, controlling it, driving the barrel up. He triggered a burst. She was totally intent on her target as a burst ripped through the ceiling over Wilfork's head. The journalist vanished to the floor. It was an old-school Soviet-era rifle, and it packed quite a kick. The full-auto recoil jarred the weapon loose in the stunned man's grip. Anya wrenched it away, then butt-stroked him in his bearded face. He fell to the floor, holding up an arm to defend himself. It didn't help. Gritting her teeth in rage, Anya smashed the metal butt plate into his face and the side of his head, battering him into the slushy, gritty rubber runner that covered the steel floorboards. She stopped. Slowly, she straightened. The gunman lay unmoving at her feet. Blood totally obscured his face. The bus was silent as a tomb. The firefight outside sounded like fireworks from a distant stadium.
That ought to hold him.
She was aware that all of them, the CHM crew, young wolves, even hardened, troubled journalist Wilfork, were staring at her as if she'd just turned into a pterodactyl.
Watch him anyway, in case it doesn't.
Jason raised an ashen, trembling face to her.
Anya, what are you doing?
What needs to be done. Keep your heads down.
She was out the open door into the snow. The Kalashnikov was a familiar, comforting weight in her arms.
I'm glad I could take care of that one without the sword coming out.
She barely felt the bite of the air. The snowflakes hit her face like tiny wet slaps. Anya followed the driver's path up the ridge toward a clump of rocks already thoroughly mounded over in white. If she was going to do any good, if she was going to do anything other than catch around and go down, she had to get to cover fast. Fortunately, the gunman on the bus flew solo to his crash landing with Anya. Apparently, the Peshmerga felt one bus full of foreign infidels only required one fighter. The others, maybe a half dozen or so, including the leader, still stood blasting happily away at the defenders in the ditch. The Americans were shooting back gamely, but it was handguns against assault rifles. It was not as hopeless as it might seem at that closer range. A burst from a Kalashnikov wasn't going to kill you any deader than a good handgun hit to chest or head. And presumably the Americans were bothering to aim. That was more than the Kurds were doing. They were ducking down behind rocks or the vehicles to reload, then standing bolt upright to blaze off their whole magazine in the general direction of the foe. Still, only Leif Baron and Larry Tate, who had joined his boss and bodyguard in the ditch, could return fire. Presumably, one or the other was sitting on Charlie Bostich's head to keep it down. Their worst problem was that they could seldom get a shot of their own off for the torrent of bullets streaming their way. It was one of the relatively few circumstances where handheld full-auto fire really did provide an advantage. The superior, if unaimed, Kurd firepower kept the American pair all but suppressed.
We're about to change that, you rat bastards.
Using the big metal lever on the side of the stamped steel receiver, she switched her weapon from full auto to single shot with the famous loud Kalashnikov clack.
Damn.
No one noticed. The noise levels were too high, and anyway, as she knew too well, when somebody was shooting at you directly, your whole world tended to narrow to the pinpoint focus on that person and his gun. Even a highly trained and seasoned special warrior like Baron would be able to spare little perception for anything but the firing enemies. Anya snugged the rifle's steel butt plate against her shoulder. Hard early lessons with a Kalashnikov taught her respect for the gun and to keep her cheek off the buttstock. To the side of her field of vision, Anya saw one Kurd fall back, downed by bullets from one of her companions. Almost directly in front of her, though, was a cagier fighter, better trained or better seasoned. He knelt behind a rock with the buttstock held to his shoulder and pulled off short bursts, instead of hosing the landscape a magazine at a time. Clearly, he was the most dangerous opponent. Aside from the fact he was more likely to hit one of her friends, he was also hard for one of them to hit, since he actually used cover. She lined up the black-capped head between the ears of the rear sights and the hooded post of the front sight. Anya squeezed the trigger. The rifle kicked Anya's shoulder hard. She let the weapon ride up in recoil, then brought it down with proper follow-through. Then she moved to another target. Even before the rising barrel had obscured her vision, she'd seen the shooter's head jerk and a cloud puff out beyond it, dark in the dull afternoon light. None of the other half-dozen standing enemies noticed the fall of the marksman behind the rock. She put down two more with solid hits to the torso before the survivors broke and ran, realizing with a sudden adrenal fear jolt that someone was firing at them from the flank. Abandoning their own vehicle, they rabbited off over the nearby hills. Baron and Larry Tate swarmed out of the ditch, grabbed up fallen Kalashnikovs, and fired after them with quick shoulder-aimed bursts. One threw up his arms, his rifle soaring up over his head theatrically, before collapsing over the top of a ridge out of sight. A velvet curtain silence descended.